Detta är en podcast från Dagens Näringsliv.
Så har du satt med justitieministern till bords på sommarofesten?
Vet du vad? Jag grämmer mig så jävligt. Jag tog mig själv i att jag sitter och mansplainar om politiken. Hej och hjärtligt välkommen till den ukens podcast från Dagens Näringsliv. Mitt namn det är Thomas Gjertsen och välkommen till dig, Merete Bø.
Oj, ingenting annat?
Nej, bare Merete Bø. Ja. Du, i dag er det en litt spennende dag.
Du, det er kjempespennende. Det er ikke så ofte man har besøk her.
Nej, vi skal altså ha besøk av en legende i vinverden. Du kan si litt mer om denne Brita, Jasper Morris.
Mm. Kjent for å lage fantastiske vinbøker om Burgund. Nå har han jo laget en ny utgave av Inside Burgundy.
Ja, for han kan helt vilt mye om hver minste lille detalj og jordflekk i Burgund.
Ja. Hvis du vil veta noe før alle andre i Burgund, så må du snakke med han. I tillegg da, så jobber han også med Hospice de Bourne-auksjonen, som hver tredje søndag i november, hvert eneste år, så det en auksjon på, som jeg håper han kommer til å fortelle mer om. Da. Men du, du stødig i brittisk engelsken din?
Jeg synes at når man snakker engelsk, man skal ha litt aksang, ikke brittisk aksang, det synes jeg, det blir for flaut. Så man må gå for en amerikansk, men ikke for mye. Hvis du har en akse på den ene siden, så har du Matthew McConaughey, han skuespiller, som sånn erke-amerikansk.
Han helt Texas.
Ja, og så har du Jens Stoltenberg på den andre enden.
Det visst far for at du ligger nærmere, Jens Stoltenberg.
Det riktig, men jeg har det godt nede i den enden av skalaen.
Then we are going to talk some English.
Yeah, but not too much like this, you know. Okay, Jasper Morris, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
We're so happy to have you here.
It's wonderful. I'm really pleased to be in Oslo.
We can say that you are one of the most influential voices of the wine world for the last 30 years or so. And definitely when it comes to Burgundy. So our listeners are very into wine, but I think they'd like to hear why was it Burgundy?
I think it goes back to my previous career, which was as a wine importer. And I'd started a small company and didn't have very much money. And it was a question of finding the region in France where we could do something a little bit different, a little bit special. And it's hard to imagine now when everybody is just Burgundy, Burgundy, Burgundy all the time. But then it was Bordeaux, and Burgundy was a hard sell. And most Burgundy that was being shipped abroad came from one of a handful of bigger merchant companies, the négociants. And you didn't have many small owner-operators, wine farmers, the domains that we know today. There were not many of those selling their wine at that time. And I happened to go to Burgundy just as that movement was starting. So I was able to do something that was different from what had happened and create a niche for myself. And after 20 years of really fighting, struggling to get these wines sold, there was a short period of about 4 or 5 years when everything was in balance. And now suddenly all the demand is there and they can't increase the production. So be careful what you wish for.
Do you have a sort of a special moment that you think of that was your first Burgundy moment that you...
Not really. It was more about that first trip when I just happened to meet some truly special people. There was a lady called Becky Wasserman, who's sadly no longer with us, but she was so influential and so helpful, whether to importers or to critics or to producers themselves. Really special person. And I'd been given an introduction to her, and she organized some visits for me. And the first two I went to were two of the great, great names of white wine production. So Domaine des Comtes Lafont, Dominique Lafont, and Jean-François Coche-Durie.
Okay. Who,
so you need to be rich these days to get those wines, but they weren't being shipped around the world at that point. And so when I went to see Lafont, I met Dominique Lafont, who's almost exactly my age. We got on really well. Mm. And that was sort of the starting point for me.
When was this?
This was 1981, end of 1981.
Yeah.
So I was able to buy some 1978s and 79s from Lafont.
And the prices for those bottles at that time?
I don't remember exactly what I paid for them, but I do remember selling some 1979. I just met the chap. He was a buyer for one of the Oxford colleges, and I knew I was going to meet him again, and I checked back in some old correspondence, and I sold him 10 dozen bottles at £130 a dozen. Now, nowadays, I'd probably only be able to allocate somebody three bottles, and it would be more than £130 for a single bottle. So things moved on.
Before you came, we also talked about your book that came out in a new edition. From what I heard, that you are now a bit more sort of free to write even more freely about the producers and also the vineyards of Burgundy now.
That's right, because the first edition came out while I was still a practicing wine merchant. I'd sold my business to a long-established English company, Berry Brothers, and I was working for them. So it's a little bit tricky to be writing about producers when you actually have a commercial interest. And so I had to be very clear and very careful about not having an obvious conflict of interest. So I wasn't going to say anything nasty about anybody. It was more factual about how people did things rather than saying, this is the best producer. And I still don't actually particularly want to do that way. It remains more of a reference book. But since I've stopped being in any way involved in wine commerce, then it's been easy to go and see lots of producers who maybe it was more difficult to get an appointment with before.
Denne podcasten sponset av TrippelTex. Å drive en bedrift uten regnskapsprogrammet TrippelTex litt som å felle trær uten motorsag. Øks funker det også, absolutt. Men det blir gammeldags, eller? TrippelTex, det fleksible regnskapsprogrammet som forenkler hverdagen for over 100 000 fornøyde kunder. Prøv gratis på TrippelTex.no.
You have been following the harvest of Burgundy for years.
Yes.
And I've seen you, I follow you on Instagram, and I see you are visiting many producers every day during the harvest time. What big changes have you been seeing the last years when it comes to climate change?
Yes, that's the obvious thing, isn't it? And so in Burgundy, we just have two grape varieties. Mm. Well, there are some minor ones too, but really it's just two grape varieties. Chardonnay for white, which we know can grow successfully in all sorts of different climates. So it's been a huge success in hotter climates in California and Australia. So global warming in Burgundy probably isn't going to make too much of a difference.
Mm.
But then we have the red grape, which is Pinot Noir, which has a thin skin, and so it gets burnt easily.
Mm.
And we have to be more careful. Just at the moment, it's all right. So instead of having three unripe vintages and one ripe one, we now have three ripe vintages and one overripe, if you like. So we have to be careful there, and people are having to change the way that they run their vineyards so that the grapes get a bit more shade, for example, that they don't pick up the sugar levels too quickly. Because we like the grapes to sit on the vines, and you're supposed to be able to count 100 days from the moment that the vine goes into flower before you want to pick it. And in a year like 2018, that got cut down to about 80, 85 days.
Yeah.
And that means that there's not really time for everything to develop in the grape that you want. Now, we've just had another hot, dry vintage in 2022.
Yeah.
You will have had it here and everywhere in Europe. And the vines seem to be understanding what they have to do now rather better because they slowed down their ripening. The leaves stayed green for much longer. And in the end, it came to a very happy, fruitful harvest, still very early at the end of August. But everything feels as though it's better balanced now than when we first started getting these hot, dry years.
When it comes to hotter vintages, one thing is the alcohol level, but is it also the aromatic ripening?
Yes.
And do you think that we will get more of the same aromatic taste of the fruit in Burgundy as you have in, that it will be more similar to the Californian?
I see what you mean, and sometimes there is a little bit more of a feel for that in the Pinots. I think the simplest way to look at ripeness in fruit is to say you can have three colours of the fruit, black, red and green. So for me, the ideal ripeness is based around red. If it's got a little bit of black, that takes you one direction, but it's fine if it's woven into the red. even a little bit of green, which some people would find underripe, I find adds a complexity, is a factor which is interesting, particularly with age. Now, if your palate is different, if you have the palate of Mr. Robert Parker in the USA, he really likes black fruit. That, for him, is ripe. And red fruit is a bit underripe. So, I mean, there's no saying who's right or who's wrong. Mm. It depends which market you're in. And I know that in Norway, my palate is going to be much more attuned. But there'll be other countries which are going to be attuned to Mr. Parker. Mm. In terms of the whites, it's interesting how the wines have still come out with a freshness at the end, despite being that little bit richer than before and the alcohol levels being a little bit higher. And then there's also been more of a movement in how people make wine to try to make wines fresher. So there's always a buzzword that lasts for about 2 years. So it was mineral. We were looking for minerality in our wines. Mm. And then suddenly, about 18 months ago, people were saying salinity. Yeah. I love that saline finish. Mm. So now that's 18 months. So now I'm looking out to see what the next one's going to be. But we like a bit of tension in our white wines rather than having them too soft and rounded and flabby. Yeah.
Is it some of the sub-regions that you think now are becoming more interesting because of the, or after the
yes.
warmer?
Yes, I think that's right. You have some villages. I hate calling them minor villages, but they're the ones which fetch less money, shall we say. Mm. So in an area like the Côte de Beaune, just south of the city of Beaune, you would have villages like Montély and Auxey-Duras and Saint-Romain. Nice wines, but on the whole, not considered in the same category is the great names of Puligny-Montrachet or Volnay or Pommard. Now with the extra ripeness, the extra warming, those wines are becoming more interesting. And because that enables the growers to charge a little bit more money, these are not areas where they're going ridiculously high, but they can earn a bit more money, which means there's an incentive to try to make them to the highest standards instead of just saying, well, these are going to be our lesser wines and so we won't take quite the same care because we won't get money back for taking that care. But now you've got several small growers in these villages who wouldn't have been considered as first-rate winemakers before, but they are putting so much effort into it, and you know, your jaw drops sometimes when you see people making magical wines from these previously lesser-known areas.
You touched upon the vintage of 22.
Yes.
How was the volume, as you could see today? Do you know anything about the volume of 22?
Yeah, so the odd thing about 2022 is having been hot and dry, you would expect it to be a low yield.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect much juice inside the berries. But it rained in the winter, and the vines have got nice deep roots that they can take advantage of that. And it rained quite heavily at the end of June, only for a short space of time, for no more than a week. But somehow or other, that has provided enough water. So when everybody came to the harvest, they could see that there were plenty of grapes. They weren't big because it hadn't rained much since, so they'd stayed quite small. But the question was going to be, would there be juice inside? Mm. And you only know when you get the grapes back to the winery and you start pressing them, and out came lots of lovely juice. But because the berries themselves are quite small, it means there's a good ratio of the skin, which is where the flavor is, and various other things as well, but we'll say flavor for now, and the juice together. So it looks as though we may have something really rather amazing in that we've got a very good quantity, not excessive, except there will always be a few greedy farmers, but the people who we care about, the people who are trying to make the best wine, it's not excessive, but it is plentiful. There's no disease at all, so it's clearly going to be at least good.
Mm.
And I hesitate to say it's going to be one of the all-time greats because we have to wait and see. And I want to be able to taste the wines in barrel next year and in bottle after that before going that far. But the conditions are there that this could be one of the special ones.
Because when you go back to the 80s and you see now that it's so hard to get a few bottles of great Burgundy.
Yes.
A small vintage, again, will rise the prices. And what do you think about the prices in 2022? I know it's hard to say, but...
And it is too early because, in fact, they mostly will not yet have declared their prices in 2021, which is a very short vintage, one of the smallest ever.
Mm.
Well, for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so what happens is because you declare your prices in Burgundy later than, let's say, the people in Bordeaux do, you know what you've got from your next harvest. Mm. So when they declared the prices for 2020, which is a very nice vintage, they put them up quite a lot because they knew they had to compensate for the following year when the crop would be so small.
Mm.
And the idea is that the price would stay the same for 2021, and it may or it may not. And then after that, 2022, big crop. It would be lovely to think that prices will come down. But the problem is not so much on the supply side, but on the demand side. And, you know, we've done our job too well over the years. And now everybody wants Burgundy in every market.
Could you ever foresee that in the 80s and the 90s also, that Burgundy would become what it is today?
No, I didn't imagine that degree of success and demand and delight in the wines of Burgundy. But I did hope that we could actually get it recognized as being back in a good place.
Yeah.
Because when I started out, the wines which had been made over the previous few years, Burgundy was not in a good place.
Mm.
The vineyards had suffered from too much chemical farming.
Mm.
Of course, now we might criticize people for having done that, but it seemed to be the wonderful solution at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to be that if you could use fertilizers and you could use chemicals to make sure you didn't have weeds and pests and diseases, it looked like win-win.
Mm.
And only subsequently did we discover that it damaged the balance of the soil.
Mm.
And we went through a period in which the wines were clearly a little bit below, definitely below where they should be.
Mm.
And I marked the turning point as 1985, partly because that happened to be a very good vintage.
Yeah.
But that was around the time that people had started to make much better decisions and you were just beginning to see the results in the wines. And through the 90s, it was a lovely decade for the wines of Burgundy, the 90s.
Mm.
That's when it really took root.
Mm.
And by the end of that decade, then Burgundy was properly on the map.
Yeah.
So let's say, today, if you now were a young wine merchant starting out, which region or in all of the wine world would you go for today? And Burgundy is not an option.
No, understood. Let me have two bites at that cherry. Let's do one in France and then one somewhere else in the world.
Perfect.
So in France, partly the problem is that historically, everybody has known about the French regions, and even if one of them falls out of interest. But I am going to choose the red wines of the Loire Valley, particularly those made with the Cabernet Franc grape, which is another one which used to be a little bit ugly and a little bit green, and now the grapes are properly ripe. And it's a flavor profile which I really enjoy. So I'm going to choose that. And I also really love the wines made up in the hills of the extreme southwest of France, in the Pyrenees, particularly the white appellation of Jurançon, which can be dry or can be sweet. But there is a personality in those wines which I find rather exciting. Where to go elsewhere in the world? And I'm trying to avoid saying places which have already succeeded, like New Zealand and California and so on. People are going higher into the hills, into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went once when I was in China to talk about Burgundy. I arranged a couple of days off and I flew to Shangri-La, which is a city which is at 3,500 meters above sea level. And from there, we drove over a pass that was over 4,000 meters to visit a vineyard and winery, which had only recently been constructed, really on the edge of Tibet. The wine is called Aoyun, and it sells very expensively, but it's Bordeaux grapes rather than Burgundy. But in a country the size of China, there have got to be some places which are going to prove to be naturals for either some of the classic grape varieties or maybe some new ones we don't know about. It's a challenge because if you go too far inland, it's too cold in the winter. The vines freeze to death unless you bury them. If you're too far over by the eastern seaboard, it's way too humid. And in Japan, they're absolutely desperate to make the best Pinot Noir in the world. but again, it's a little bit humid. But there are some very, very good efforts nonetheless. So who knows? We've discovered the joys of English sparkling wines, which we could never have imagined before.
Mm-hmm.
And we look forward to a few vintages from Norway, Sweden, Denmark. I know there are some grapes being grown.
There are some grapes in the south. So you can,
yeah.
Okay, so Norwegian Riesling and Chinese Bordeaux blends.
Yeah, I served somebody blind at dinner at home, someone who's a very good taster, and he'd sort of got everything else right. And I served him a sweet wine, and he just named every sweet wine in the world. And this comes from a vineyard which is on the border between China and North Korea. And it's an ice wine, such as they make in Canada, with the same grape they use in Canada, which is Vidal, and made in the same way. And there was just no way he was going to get it. So anyway, I was being very naughty and very bad host, but I enjoyed it.
Was it good?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. No, we all had a second glass.
Yeah.
So. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Are there any producers of Burgundy that you recently tasted that you think, wow, you got to try this?
Yes, I keep finding new people. I'm actually deliberately trying to do that because, in a sense, the world knows about Romane Conti. I believe even you know about Romane Conti. And that you have maybe had a glass in the vineyards, you lucky people. And it's boring, in a sense, if you just keep going back to the grand classics.
It's true.
So I have been around in some of these smaller villages. There's a domain called Buisson in Saint-Romain, equal amounts of red and white. And these people, they're experimenting in so many different ways. They're working so hard in the vineyards, where we all say the same thing time and time again, that quality wine is made in the vineyards first, and then you just have to avoid messing it up when you get it back to the cellar. There's a chap called Olivier Lamy, domain Hubert Lamy in Saint-Aubin. He's been around a little bit longer, but he's become a little bit of a guru, not to the pundits around the world, but to other producers. Because he, again, is just so meticulous in the work he does in the vineyards. And I can never get a tasting there during daylight hours. So I have to go sort of after dark in November, freezing cold, and taste the wines with him then. So it's people like that who I think are very exciting. Yeah. And you get new generations. There's already a wonderful grower in Chevry-Chambertin called Domaine Trappe, Jean-Louis Trappe. And he's improved a lot on what his father did. His father's still alive and happy and healthy. Jean-Louis is now just about reaching retirement age. But his two boys, they're going to take it to a whole nother level beyond that. We've already seen the work they've done in the vineyards. Last three or four vintages of this domain, I think, have been absolutely cracking. And what's also quite nice is that domains like that, it's not true of everybody, but they've got a Grand Cru, top of the tree, a Chambertin. So that's going to cost you a few hundred pounds a bottle. a few thousand kroner if I've got my exchange rate right. But they also make little wines called Bourgogne Rouge, Bourgogne Passe du Grain, probably a Bourgogne Blanc or an Aligoté as well. And the sons have just taken over some more vineyards in the less expensive areas. So you can get the genius of these people for not very much money if you're happy to go with these less famous appellations. And the thing that gives me so much pleasure, it's absolutely the key for me. It's not about how famous the vineyard is, how expensive the wine might be, but you can taste a wine, and when you put it in your mouth, you just feel this big grin coming over your face because you realize that that particular wine has been made as well as that particular wine could be made. And that's the real joy.
Yeah. I think we have to talk also a little bit about Hospice de Bonne.
Ah, yes. Okay, so I'm going to have to try and make a very complicated subject simple. It's a wine auction. Well, firstly, the Hospice de Bonne is the Hospital of Bonne, the actual practicing modern hospital. It's an incredible museum building in the center of Bonn called the Hotel Dieu. That's part of it.
And Bonn, just to our listeners, is in the middle of Burgundy.
It's in the middle. It's the wine capital of Burgundy. Yeah. It's not a big city. It's a town of 20,000 people, but it's absolutely wine capital. And it's the historic center. And this idea of the Hospice de Bonn, it was founded in 1443 by the Chancellor of the Duchy of Burgundy at the time. And he'd spent most of his life raiding money from people and being very rapacious on behalf of his lord, the Duke. And suddenly he thought, time's getting on and I need to put myself in a better position from karma point of view. And so he founded this hospital for the poor, which was a new idea then, because only the rich people got treated. And the poor, if they were ill, they died. So he started this hospital for the poor and the old and children, sick children. And it's continued to this day. But it's funded over the years by charitable donations, which were quite often of vineyards. So they now have a vineyard holding of 60 hectares, something like that, which makes them one of the bigger individual producers in the region. It's still not vast, but it's bigger. And each year, their own team of grape growers, of vignerons, will do the work in the vineyards. And then there is a terrific person. She's called Ludovine Griveaux, and she's the general manager or winemaker at the winery of the Hospice de Bonne. So she sets the rules for these grape growers to work with. They deliver to her the grapes from each vineyard on the day that she says. She turns them into wine, so that's happening now for the 2022 crop. And then in November of the same year, so the third Sunday in November, it's a big festival in Bonn. People come from all around the world. It's party time for the city. And they hold on the Sunday an auction in which the wine is sold off, but barrel by barrel. You think the word's wine auction and you think it could be three bottles of this or a case of 12 of that. But no, this is barrel after barrel. And you can be a private individual. You can be one of the local Bonn merchants, or you can be an importer and say, okay, I'm going to have a barrel of that, or even five barrels of that. Mm-hmm. And a barrel will get you 288 bottles. And after all, of good wine, that's not going to last you long, is it? I mean, you and your friends can polish off 288 bottles in a reasonable space of time. And they make these lovely wines, all of which come with this presentation. So we have a particular label that looks the same for every wine, apart from the name of the particular vineyard, obviously the vintage. It will have the name of the merchant who you've chosen to do the rest of the, what they call the élevage, the maturing of the wine.
She makes the wine and then...
But she doesn't do the aging of it.
Okay.
So in November, the barrels are sold. And then over the next couple of months, you specify, you say, I want this person to take charge of the rest of the life of the wine before it's bottled. So the aging in barrel. And then the bottling. So finally, on the label, you'll have the name of the wine, you'll have the name of the person who's done that aging, and you can have your own name. Or the name of your favorite cat or dog or whatever it might happen to be. So you can buy a barrel for an anniversary, for a new child or new grandchild who's on the scene this year. And they've got something special with their name on it.
How much does it count the person that you ask to be in charge for the last caretaking of the wine and the bottling? And
okay, so it's not absolutely crucial to the wine because that was happened in the vineyard, mm-hmm. plus in the winemaking.
Yeah.
But there will be a difference. You also get a sort of an extra little bit of kudos if it's a well-known name who's made it. It makes the whole thing feel that little bit smarter. But yes, there is a choice there. And you have one or two people who really specialize. They don't make wine, but they are specialists in doing this aging. And if you talk to them, they're absolutely convinced how important it is. And I have a friend here who's an importer in Norway. And he, last year, when he bought two barrels of the same wine, he's actually got two different people to do the maturing. So afterwards, he's going to be able to have a little tasting with all his friends and customers between exactly the same wine. Mm. And the only difference is that two different people did the maturing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Is it also decided in advance what kind of oak
yes.
barrels are you going to use?
So when you buy a barrel, you actually physically, you could walk out with a barrel under your arm. Physically you bought the barrel. Now that means that the barrel disappears every year. So you have to have a new one each year. Mm. So unlike a lot of winemaking, everything actually starts out in 100% new wood. And the Ausbees put it out to tender which barrel maker is going to supply the barrels. And originally it would be one for red and one for white. They're now more sophisticated because unfortunately what that meant was only the really big players would have enough barrels to be able to offer that. So now they've divided it up into batches. So the appellation of Pommard, for example, it's a style of wine, Pommard, which they think might suit one particular barrel maker. So they put it out for tender and they have selected one barrel maker to handle all the Pommard wines.
Mm.
And then somebody else will do maybe a Grand Cru and somebody else and so on.
Mm.
Has your life been in the wine world as you wanted it to be, or is
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, my family have always been lawyers and I get paid to drink wine. I mean, so something's gone right. But something which occurred to me just by chance a couple of years ago was that drinking wine we think of as a pleasure, I'm sure. But the other thing that occurred to me is actually it gives me happiness, which is slightly different from pleasure. It's something which is spiritual is too grand a word, but it is something more about your whole life than just pleasure, which is a fleeting moment of enjoyment. And wine has given me that. And it's intellectually really stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
Burgundy in particular, because it's so complex. There are so many different vineyards, so many different producers. But I get a new vintage to play with every year. And all the old vintages keep changing.
Mm.
I mean, we know the weather patterns which cause them to be that. But each time I go back and taste a 2010 now, each year it's moved on since I first tasted it in barrel in 2011. So I never stop learning.
There are new generations of winemakers coming.
And new generations, exactly, yes. And now it's not this phrase in French. Our domain would be so-and-so. Domaine Dupont, père et fils, father and son.
Yeah. Mm.
But now it's daughter as often as it is son, which is great.
Mm. And you'll keep on doing what you're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, why would you retire from this job? So I thought, since we're talking about Pommard and the barrel maker, perhaps we should taste one. So this is a Pommard of a cuvée called Dame de la Charité, who are actually the ladies of charity. So they would have been the nursing sisters, the nuns who were looking after the poor and the old and the sick. And it's 2019 and was bought by a Norwegian importer. And so it will appear in the market soon.
Okay.
And I made him give me a bottle.
This will be also sold in the Monopoly?
Yeah, 188 bottles. 288 bottles,
that's right.
In November.
Oi.
Mm.
Now in November.
Okay.
So it's very, very young, 2019. It's one of the recent hotter and a little bit drier vintages, but it's one that is so juicy. Mm. And I mean, you can tell this is quite a ripe profile, but it's still balanced. It doesn't feel top heavy. It's really on the cusp between the red fruit and the black fruit, I think. Mm-hmm. But Pommard has a reputation for being tough and firm and actually a bit disagreeable until it's 15 years old.
Yeah.
And it's not true anymore, because this is one of the grander names that has really benefited from the global warming. Because it used to be, there was too much water in the soil there, and that pumped up into the leaves, and that gave you a little bit of a toughness, tannins they are, in the wine. And yes, the wines were fine, but you really had to age them for such a long time. And now there's less water, because it's hotter, that the soil is actually perfectly balanced, and so you're getting these more generous wines, which are much more about the fruit now, rather than the structure.
But isn't it also so that in Pommard, it's actually... you get two styles of wine because of the
yes, because there's a little river running through the middle, and and this actually, this particular cuvée is a blend from both sides.
Okay,
so the top vineyard on either side is Rougien on one side and Epinot on the other side.
Yeah,
and this has got both of those in it, so it's the complete deal.
You feel the oak here. It's so it needs, although the fruit is very juicy.
It's such a young wine,
But it needs some time to integrate the oak, I think.
Oak goes in and out of fashion. Periods when everybody wants the oak flavor, and then we're more in a period when people don't. And I think probably this market doesn't especially want oaky wines. But for me, what matters is whether or not the oak is damaging the fruit. So I don't mind in a young wine if it has a little bit of a new oak flavor, when the real intention is that this wine should be drunk in a few years' time. So it's when the wine is at its perfect moment for drinking, that's when you don't want to have any oak flavor.
Yeah.
I don't mind at this stage. But the other thing is, what you're left with at the end of the tasting, it's all about the fruit.
Yeah.
Whereas badly judged oak will just cut the finish off, and it will leave you with a dry flavor in your mouth and no fruit. So I think that one works very well.
If you were to judge the 19 versus the 18 as a whole vintage, what is your...
I think that there are some real high spots in 18, which may be even ahead of the best of 19, but 19 is more regular. It's more consistent.
Okay.
And they're always enjoyable. I think everybody loves 19, whether you are a specialist or whether you are a drinker who I don't know about wine. I know nothing about wine. I've just been poured this glass. So 19 works on both levels. 18 is more difficult. They're not going to be attractive wines when they're young, but I think there is a potential upside with aging, which could go even further. And I feel the same about 2020 as well.
And now you're talking about the reds.
I'm talking about the reds, yes.
And the whites?
The whites, weirdly enough, I mean, they're grown side by side in the same weather conditions, but some vintages seem to work better for one color or another. And in 18, the whites were very, very generous. It was a huge crop, even bigger than 2022. It was a record crop, really. And so the wines don't have as much concentration. I rather like them because I like the balance of them and I enjoy the fruit. But they're not considered to be in the top category. And then 19, the wines are a little bit more concentrated, a little bit richer. You feel the sunshine in the flavor profile, but the fruit never got cooked or burned or scorched, and there is enough acidity at the back. It's always difficult talking about wine in words because we end up talking about things like acidity. And I mean, acid, it's not nice. If you want to get enjoyment out of a wine, it doesn't encourage you to drink it. They say, it's a wine with really good acidity.
A good wine tends to be much broader than our language, so we can't...
Yes, yes, absolutely. I can feel a wonderful vocabulary in my mind as I'm tasting the wine, but when it comes to writing it down afterwards...
I have the same feeling when I speak English. Okay. Thank you so much, Jesper.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fortell mer.
Nei, for det ikke noe mer enn det. Jeg har dritet meg ut. Ferdig med det. Hvis jeg får magesår den neste halve året, så vet du hvorfor.
Da må ringe helseministeren.
Og forklare hvorfor helsevesenet i Norge er så viktig.
Grunnen til at jeg ringer deg nå, det at vi bekymret for hvordan du har det.
Kjenner et selvmordsforsøk? Eller en gisseltagning?
If I get the money and the car,
set the hostage free.
Gjør politiets krise- og gisselforhandlere alltid sin makt for å hindre at mennesker skal dø. Hør podcasten Forhandlinger på liv og død fra Dagens Næringsliv.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Du har nå hørt en podcast fra Dagens Næringsliv.